Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Don't think too often about the future, because it's coming if you like it or not. Don't start to question the things that might be yet to come in the rising sun, because it's coming like a train that's running down that track. And you don't look back and you say, it's not tomorrow, it's all about today. Kat, we are getting married in 52 minutes. Go put on your dress. The car's coming at 10:30.
You mean 10, right?
Yeah, 10. Absolutely. And in the morning...
Hi, John Schwab here from Curtain Call, and welcome to episode 122 of the Curtain Call Theater Podcast, the podcast that brings you backstage as close as you possibly can be, often while the shows are actually happening, to meet the people that make theater happen. And just a quick reminder, if you can download and subscribe to our podcast from the Apple Podcast app or from iTunes, that way your feed will be automatically updated when we release episodes. And now for this week's podcast. On this week's episode, I'm catching up with another friend I haven't seen for quite some time. Half of it is that we're both so busy, but there was no excuse when I heard that Lawrence Markwive had a new musical being performed with the National Youth Musical Theater. Along with his writing partner, Timothy Knapman, they take the story of the Big Bad Wolf and turn it on its head. Lawrence is an extremely prolific music writer and all-around good guy, and he always seems to have something on the go. So I really appreciated him sitting down with me, taking the time to talk about his early career, how and why he got into the composer game, and just what it's like writing and recording music in a new digital age. And I could have talked to Lawrence for 2 hours. We nearly did talk for an hour. I told him it would be 15 minutes, but I mercifully have cut this down to 30 minutes, which is slightly longer than usual, but I think it's totally worth it because we really get to talk quite a bit. And just a heads up, there are two dogs and a cat in the room when we were recording, and there were also some lovely open French doors, you know, leading out to the gardens, so just kind of let the bird song in. It was a fantastic afternoon. Couldn't have been a better setting. Anyway, have a listen.
Okay, my name is Lawrence Markwive. I am a composer and lyricist working in musical theatre in the United Kingdom.
Excellent. And, you know, you're working in the United Kingdom, but you're everywhere. And we'll get into that.
That's true. I'm based in the United Kingdom, but the show's... go around the world a little bit. Yeah.
Excellent. What I'd like to do is, I don't know, maybe just give a little potted history about, you know, where you and your, you know, the people you work with, your compatriots and comrades, where you guys...
Sorry, the dog is sniffing the microphone.
Sniffing the mic. Fantastic. It's okay.
Well, I mean, for the last 5 years, I can't believe it's been 5 years, about around that, it's gone really quick, but I've been writing with a guy called Timothy Knapman, who is a... also a children's author. Yeah. I'm not a children's author. He is also a children's author, but he writes musicals. We've done 3 shows together. And the one we're putting on at the moment with National Youth Music Theatre is the first one that we wrote. So actually it was when we met, he came to me with this idea about a family show based on the kind of the story of the Big Bad Wolf and a kind of a twist in the tale and a retelling of that. And it was a really nice idea. And this was... back in 2012, because with the Olympics were on when we started it, and that was the first thing we wrote, but it's the third show that we've had put on.
Okay,
because after we were writing that, then we got hired to do a show, which was the second show we wrote, the third show we wrote, but the second show was put on, and the third show we wrote was the first show.
Oh my gosh! Okay,
and so we did a show in the Midlands two or three years ago. And so really this project that we're working on now, which is called Growl, which is a family musical, which is being done by National Youth Music Theatre on tour this summer or this spring. It kept getting shoved aside, kept getting shelved for other things. And because we wrote it on spec, obviously no one paid us to write it originally. So we just, he kind of said, would you like to work together? And I said, yeah, this is a nice little idea. So we did. But we had no commission, and then we got a couple of other commissions after that. And Tim did another show with NYMT and pitched them this show, which they liked, and we did a workshop last year, and they took it to full production this year. So it's great. It's lovely that a show we've kind of you know, had on the back burner for 5 years, 5 or 6 years, is getting to see the light of day. It takes that long.
Yeah, I mean, it really does. It's, people think that, oh, it's, okay, yeah, we write a musical, it's going to go on next year. It's not kind of...
No, it's, perhaps if I'd known, it was quite so difficult. I mean, my show...
Well, listen, let's take you back. I mean, how did you get into, yeah, into writing your music, you know, you're becoming a musical writer?
Yeah.
But also because you kind of worked your way into, right, I'm composing now, I'm creating, because I've known you as a musical director as,
yeah,
well, but,
yeah,
take me back to where this...
I mean, I guess that is the process. I mean, you know, it just depends how far back you go, but originally I set out to be an actor because as a young person you kind of fell in love with musicals and with, yeah, theatre, that seemed like the only option, you know.
It's the obvious path to be, isn't it?
Yeah,
the obvious path.
So I was 14 and I joined a local theatre group. This is down in Kent, down by the sea, and but I was writing then. I mean, I wrote shows then with that theatre group, and we put them on then. I wrote a couple that we didn't put on, but I wrote a couple that we did, and they did quite well. But I went off to drama school thinking I'll be an actor, and I was writing shows all the time. I'm at college, yeah, and then I left. I did a couple of jobs as a performer. Discovered that when you're a performer, kind of everyone's looking at you the whole time. I kind of, no one warned me about that. I didn't like it. It made me feel a bit uncomfortable. So I didn't like that as much as I thought I would. I got into being a musical director, mainly through putting on a show of my own.
All right.
Which kind of came along, and the opportunity came along to put on a show, which actually our mutual friend Kyle was in.
Ah,
that's how I met Kyle.
And
that's probably not particularly relevant for your podcast.
That's right. Kyle's dad, look at
that. Kyle dad, of great renown.
Yeah.
And then, so from that, I got into a lot of musical direction, a lot of teaching, singing, teaching, that sort of thing. And then I started writing a kind of a show properly in the early 2000s when I kind of had an idea that I thought, this is quite a good idea. And that became the show Tomorrow Morning, which is kind of a show that's had probably the most success,
yeah,
out of my work. And so I began that in the early 2000s, but again, it didn't get put on until 2006. So it got workshopped and was in kind of festivals and development. This is just me talking at
that's
you now,
great,
nonstop. So that was, and then that finally, you know, we did that show in New York in 2011.
Yeah.
So that was 10 years from conception to being an off-Broadway musical, which is...
But that's great. But, I mean, and Tomorrow Morning, it's quite funny, you know, it just... When you hear yourself talking out loud and you're saying these things like, God, I'm talking forever, but it's not that... That's kind of a journey that's
yeah,
what it takes.
It is.
It was really good to see Tomorrow Morning, because it went to Chicago. It's been all over the place.
Yes.
And it's got, you know, there's a cast album.
John Schwab, there are three cast albums of Tomorrow Morning. There's a German cast album, there's an American cast album, there's the original British,
yes,
cast album,
yeah,
as well.
Which,
yeah,
I've heard the original British.
Yeah. And actually, the show has changed so much, and we almost made the first cast album too soon, because
right,
the show has, it's kind of like a nostalgic thing, but the show is so different now from that original album that I kind of feel like it doesn't... It's lovely. It's a lovely memory. But in,
yeah,
a way, the show has moved on so much, I kind of wish we can make another one now. But the German cast album was released a couple of years ago, which is good. That was like the first international. But yeah, it's, I think, four continents, five languages. It's been,
yeah,
it's been all over the place. But it's one of those things where most people still haven't heard of it.
Right.
You know, it's not a household name.
But it gets done,
yeah, and I'm hoping it's going to get done more in the future, not less. It's, you know, it's one of those things where it's and I've, you know, been kind of, we've been looking at, we've always kind of looked after the show ourselves, and we've been kind of looking at reaching out to kind of a publishing house or a,
yeah,
licensing house, and rather than just kind of handling it ourselves, with actually kind of bringing someone else in, because we kind of actually realized if it's done this well on our own, just think how good it could do, you know, with a kind of a big... And one of our other shows has just been picked up by a publisher, so I'm kind of pitching Tomorrow Morning at this moment.
Well, thank you for sitting down to talk to me and not working on your pitch. It's great.
Yeah.
I mean, but I suppose the more you write, though, the more you have in your arsenal and back catalog,
yeah,
as it were, you know, it becomes more, I suppose, accessible to a producer who goes, oh, well, we've done one of Lawrence's plays, musicals, let's
yes,
see what else
I guess so. And I always kind of think that actually anything that I do now hopefully sparks interest in that other work. But there's kind of two types of project in if you're kind of working in musicals. kind of in the way I work, in the sense that there's your kind of on-spec projects or your labours of love that you want to do. Mm. And then occasionally you get hired to write something, which is fantastic. And you put on a show, you know, or you write a show knowing when it's going to be on. And that's kind of the big difference in a way. So the last three projects, at least three projects that I've worked on, we've known when the show is going to be produced and who it's going to be produced by and when it's going to open, which is a much better project in a way. So, you know, it gives you a real incentive to get, as opposed to like when you're young and you're writing a show, you can tinker with it for 2 years. And I tinkered with Tomorrow Morning for a long time, you know, before we actually put it, and we carried on tinkering for many, many years to the detriment at some point we kind of, you know, tinkered with it so much we had to go back and untinker and put it back to the way it was. Shows are never finished, they are merely abandoned.
Are they abandoned? And then they're reworked.
Yeah.
You get a job at the mill and you start to build a home. And there's a baby on the way. And you find you lost that young man's urge to roam. You'll be here come what may. Every day you stand tall by a great waterfall of liquid fire. You pay every debt with your strength and your sweat and you never tire. You know where you stand in the world, you're a man and there's no praise higher. Taking no nonsense from the fallen cause you know no fear. Doing the job that you were born for, that's the deal.
Went to drama school.
I did.
And you went straight into, you know, did you just kind of go, right, well, I'm going to do a bit of music directing? Did you do things like, you know, audition accompanist and kind of...
I did that sort of thing, rehearsal piano, audition piano, playing for all the... I did coaching at all the colleges.
Right.
Arts Ed and Mount View and all those, you know, all those ones, and did a lot of work. And then I was a musical director for especially for Mount View, which was my old college, my alma mater, and worked for that for a long time. And then really, it was only when I started kind of composing and thinking, actually, this is what I need to do.
Yeah.
That in the end, I kind of said, I have to quit the other stuff.
Right.
Partly because of time, because being a musical director takes up all your time.
Yeah, I bet.
You have no, and also all your headspace, so you can't really concentrate on anything else. And also just in terms of thinking that I just needed to commit to it.
Yeah.
And,
that's a big step, isn't it?
Yeah, that was about 13 years ago.
Because you go from working on other people's stuff and music to kind of going, all right, I'm going to be totally subjective. I'm going to write my own music for people
to
judge.
But when I was working other people's stuff, I was always wishing I could, you know, write it, always wishing I could rewrite it or always wanted to be creative. And I wanted to be really, and you yourself, I mean, you're an actor who has become a producer and has become a creative. Because if you have that kind of need inside you, you want to be as far back in the creative process as possible.
Yeah, true.
And actually, it's partly a control thing. I mean, I suppose we're all control freaks in some way, and I kind of have to rein in my megalomaniacal tendencies when I'm working with other people, because I kind of do want to have input on every aspect of what I do, which sometimes I really annoy people because I kind of am getting involved in everything, and they're just like, dude, just shut up and do the music. And okay, fine. But with shows, I've written the lyrics, or I've co-written lyrics with other people, or I've written the book, or I've co-written the book, and you know, I don't have just kind of one way of doing it. But there was a need to be creative, which, you know, is as kind of powerful now as it was then. If probably more so now, actually.
Yeah.
Wanting to, wanting to create, but also actually, I'm really interested in the business of it now as well, and I kind of. The business inside of the industry as well as just the creative side.
Right. Do you have a production company?
I do not. No, I don't. I have a business that I run with my wife, which is a performing arts school and college, which actually is going to do one of my shows next year.
Oh, nice. Well, listen, we'll put links to that in the show notes.
Well, it's early days, but we're going to do it. But no, I don't. And actually, I have thought that I would love to get more involved in producing my own work, and there is a project that I'm working on doing at a concert of this year as a producer, which was a show I workshopped about 6 years ago, and has been again, things get shelved for other projects and things get in the way, but it's a show I wrote called Stealing Mona Lisa, which I love, and I'm gonna do something, produce it. We're gonna make an album and hopefully do a concert.
Nice.
Because I think actually my priority at the moment is to record and release my work much more than getting it on stage,
right?
Because I think I want to have something tangible that will last.
Sure.
And actually, when you do a theatre production, no matter how lovely it is, it's gone.
It's ephemeral.
My shows unfortunately do not run for years and years and years in the West End. So maybe one day they will, but I mean, even then, it's fleeting, and it's it's a show. If you can kind of capture that, I think then you've got something tangible that.
And also the smaller producing theaters, and listen, let's face it, they're people are hungry for live entertainment, and they're hungry for live shows and good stories well told, and and not just, you just talked about having a German sound or cast recording. I've seen a clip of one of your shows in Seoul. Midnight.
Yes,
midnight. And I think that there is a world out there where people need shows to produce, and I think Tomorrow Morning is four characters, and
it is
it's
eminently producible for every theatre that's ever done, Closer Than Ever or Songs for a New World do Tomorrow Morning. Someone said to me once, a show is not a show until it's got a cast album, and I kind of think, yeah, that is true, because you can't, the first thing if you say to anyone, I've written a musical, the first thing they'll say is, can I listen to it?
Yeah.
And if you go, oh, no, actually, you can't. Yeah. But it's really good, So, for the sake of being a composer and wanting to have the music kind of preserved and for it to kind of outlive me, which sounds very grandiose. But, I need to get it all down, get it recorded.
Legacy is important. It's okay. You've something to be proud of. You've got something out there. Yeah. It's amazing. Now, I would love to talk to you about the National Youth Music Theatre thing, because I think it's an amazing thing what they do, and B, just to talk about Grau. This is going to be your third. Is it the third show?
It's the third show I wrote with Tim. Yeah, we did a show called Danny Hero, which was a family musical, which was on in the Midlands about two years ago. Which we wrote together. It was the third show, and then the second show we wrote together was Midnight, which was on last year at the Union Theatre in London, which was an absolute contrast to this show. So Midnight is very kind of dark and very mature and adult, and it's not adult, it's not X-rated, it's very it's about Stalin and Soviet era kind of politics. And Growl is about woodland creatures and animals gambling around the forest, and it's just, it's fantastic. And Tim had this idea just to tell the tale of the Big Bad Wolf with a twist from a completely different perspective, whereby the Big Bad Wolf is not bad at all; he's simply misunderstood.
I love that.
Yeah, and it's actually a beautiful story, because it becomes a story about tolerance and acceptance of everybody. Sorry, my dog is sniffing the microphone again. It becomes a story about tolerance and acceptance of everybody's differences and everybody's kind of need to fit in, but a need to be true to who they are.
Yeah,
which is just a great message to send out to children,
especially today.
And that the NYMT is the best place to do it, because it's so diverse. The different people who are involved, like talented kids from all, and I'm not supposed to call them kids, talented young people from all over the country, have come and auditioned, and they get in to be in this show. And so there's, every different type of person you can think of is in the company.
It's such a great opportunity for you, Lawrence, to kind of get the work also produced to a level where a lot of people are going to see it.
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, they do some shows in London, and this is the tour. We have a performance at the Rose Theatre in Kingston.
Perfect. What a great theater.
Which is a beautiful place to do it. And it's almost like the perfect place to do it. But we're going to, The Curve in Leicester. And we're going to...
I think quite a few people are going to see this.
I hope so.
Those are two major
Barry's and Edmonds as well.
Well, great.
But I think it's... the National Youth Music Theatre comes with its own kudos and reputation, which is fantastic. And their production values are so high that it's like working... It's irrelevant that it's a children's theatre company. Yeah. It's not. You're working with, like, the best professionals and the yes. creative teams yeah. are... You know, we have a fantastic director called Richard Fitch, who is... And Chris Cumming is our...
He's amazing.
He's amazing. And yes. he says in such a nice way, I really think you should try this. Just try it. And we walk away and we go... Why did we never think of that? Like, little tiny thing, like,
yeah.
what if that song was a duet yeah. instead of a solo song?
Great.
Where, you know, it was a good solo, but it's an amazing duet. Yeah. And so he's brought real genuine attention to it. You know, it's not a little theatre, children's theatre show. It's a really epic production. There are 40 young people in the cast.
Oh, that's great.
And we have an orchestra of 10. We have you know, great costumes and the set is I haven't seen it yet. I've seen the model and it's yeah. you know, it's so the production values are awesome and so we couldn't be happier really that it's the first outing for Growl.
Excellent. It's just a little growl over there.
That was the dog, not me, making that noise. I just wanted to put that in.
I love it. And do you do your arrangements?
I did for this. I did have orchestrated the show. Actually, I started doing it the three shows I've done with Tim, I have orchestrated all of them.
Okay.
And I've actually fallen in love with that job.
Really?
Yeah. I have worked with orchestrators who have it's a real skill. It's a real challenge. And like I said, I just love to get involved in every aspect of it. And I do like to have kind of control.
Mm.
And I was given the opportunity to orchestrate Growl, and actually I orchestrated Midnight and Danny Hero. And prior to that, often my shows were kind of done with a small band. Like Tomorrow Morning is piano, bass, yes. drums, and saxophone or clarinet. And so it's not really orchestrating, it's kind of just putting it together and just giving everyone something to do. But when you have a 10-piece orchestra, it's... and actually I've learned so much through this process of doing it. I just kind of have learned more. And we did Midnight with an on-stage band who were the cast, the actor musicians who were in the action and on stage. So, and that it was completely different setup. And so I really was always determined for Midnight that the way the music worked became part of the drama, not just the orchestra separate. And so I kind of insisted on doing those arrangements myself. And I didn't want to... I mean, you know, obviously, I'm not saying I would never work with another orchestrator. I want to work with great people on everything. But it is a fascinating skill to have or to try and develop. And it just makes you experience the music when you've written the music and kind of finished the show. You haven't finished the show because then you have to orchestrate it. And actually, the hard part is the logistics of it. Like, then you have to deal with all the band parts and the sheer crap that comes with having to get everything right and then sit in the
Is that like, my trumpet can't play that note?
That has happened. That has occurred. Or my trumpet can play that note. Did you? Really?
Oh, wow.
I thought you didn't go with that high. And she says, "Oh yes, I can.
Oh,
I can
nice.
Take it up there if you take it up there." But so that's. But actually, you know, orchestrating for, you know, getting to orchestrate for like a brass section in a show. So I feel like really chuffed that my work has kind of got to the point where I have a brass section in the show when I was working with a little rock band.
Exactly. See, that was going to be my next question, is that when you now get to write music, and, you know, like you said, this is a great thing because this is kind of a commissioned, you know, you're doing something for, you know, National Youth Music Theatre, and then with the 10-piece orchestra, does that kick you on to produce, to kind of think of bigger, your next project, or like you want to go, well, let's try 15, 18 piece pit.
Yes.
Know?
Do you have one lying around? Do you have one handy? Absolutely. No, I really, yeah, it does. And actually I did a little, like a Sunday night concert a few weeks ago or a couple of months ago, which I co-produced with my friend Kieran Brown, who was one of the performers in the show. And, when he kind of came to me and said, let's do a little cabaret, I said, okay, but we have to have a band. And he said, well, it's a little, just a little venue and just a little Sunday night thing. I said, okay, but we have to have a band.
Yeah.
And so we had a six-piece band for my little Sunday night show, which was kind of ridiculous and expensive. But I didn't want to ever do that show with those songs with just me at the piano.
Yeah.
Partly because that's not the type of music it is. You know, it's music that is designed to be played by a bigger group.
Yeah.
So, yeah, if I can get to the point where I can work with an orchestra or bigger forces, I will keep pushing for that. Absolutely, yeah.
This same place 100 years I've gone. I'm haunted by a melody that still plays on. 100 years of searching takes its toll. Hunting for that boy's pure and perfect soul. He never knew what I can do. And if I'd only done it.
Right, future. What's next after Growl? And then we'll go on to dates, but although I've just kind of given you a leading question, like, would you like to write with a bigger, you know, pit? But
yeah,
do you have things that are...
I kind of just want to keep exploring and doing new things. And I often think that whatever musical I'm working on will kind of be my last one. And I often say to Tim, oh, come on, the world doesn't need another musical, does it? But at the same time, whenever we sit together and have drinks, we kind of end up going, what about that movie? Or what about this movie? Yes. And let's do that. So I kind of, here's the thing. If I'm going to do more musicals, I think I want to do something big.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Something that can kind of really have an impact.
Yeah.
And whether that is something kind of, I don't necessarily mean commercial, but just something that people know, like an adaptation of a book or a film or something.
Yeah.
Something you don't have to explain. Something you can just go, oh, I'm doing XYZ.
That's nice.
And so everyone goes, okay, I get it, completely. Yeah. Whereas even, I'm doing The Big Bad Wolf. What do you mean you're doing The Big Bad Wolf? Well, it's a musical, or Midnight, which was based on a play, but it was based on a play by an Azerbaijani author, a playwright, which is like really obscure, so you have to explain it. And so if I just go, oh, I'm doing some musical based on a film that you recognise, and then and producers at the same time will then go, okay, I understand completely, and they'll either go, yeah, I love the idea, or not. So I'd love to do something, you know, something big like that. And I did a kind of a foray into working in film a couple of years ago, or last year in fact, and so I'm hoping going to do more that sort of thing, kind of just where I just write music. And actually I just want to spend some time just writing music, recording it, releasing it, and if people listen to it, then that would be marvelous.
I do. But yeah, that sounds great.
I just, like I said, recording everything I write has become. I suppose it's a thing of getting older. I used to write music and just go, fantastic, I feel really proud of myself, and move on and write something else. And now I kind of have a sense of actually, you know, I want people to hear it, whether they like it or not. Is then kind of, I can't control that bit, but I want to put it out in the world. I, you know, kind of realize that unless you put stuff out, and especially in this day and age where you can just release.
Yes.
You know, I could write something today and release it tomorrow morning.
Yeah.
And I'm still, because I'm old, I'm still of the generation where I kind of think, oh, well, if I want to release music, do I not need to get like the A&R man at EMI to like
it?
Yeah,
exactly.
Actually, no, I don't. Yeah. There's this little thing called YouTube, or this little thing called iTunes.
Yeah.
And Spotify, and you know, Jesus, I mean, there is so, and that means that there is a whole ton of music out there to compete with, but it also is actually a fantastic opportunity, and I'm only just realizing that.
That's perfect.
And at the same time, it takes as we discussed at the beginning of this conversation, it takes a hell of a long time to put on a musical.
Yeah.
But actually, to record stuff and put it out in the world it takes a hell of a long time, but it didn't take quite as long as putting on a show.
Yeah.
So at the moment, I'm orchestrating Stealing Mona Lisa to do an album of that, And we're going to do an album of Midnight as well, because put that show on. And the cast were fantastic, and the band, who were the cast, were fantastic. And we am absolutely determined that we capture that, because the show was on for a month in a little theatre. Mm. And it may never be done as well as that. It may never be done again. I mean, it's been done abroad, but it may never be done here again. I'm sure it will. But I want to capture that and record, if I can record that cast, or at least record a cast of that show. And then I have to go back and finish revise the orchestrations for Danny Hero, because that show is being licensed by Theatrical Rights Worldwide.
Okay.
So I have some work to do. We did some rewrites for that show since that was on. So I have to do that. And then I have two or three other kind of irons in the fire, two or three other projects going on. And I have this business that I run, which is kind of epic as well, which distracts me in a good way, which is nice.
See,
I'm not in a desperate hurry to write.
It's great, because I love this. I hate the term slashies.
Slashies?
You know, but multi-hyphenate.
Oh, yeah, this thing. Yeah.
I love the fact, because I'm not just an actor. You know, I produce, I direct, I write music. I'm not anywhere near anything, but I'll sit at home with my guitar and piano and write music for me. But, you know, and I think that what you're doing is exactly what I feel like a creative person should be doing, which is creating, which is moving, which is being busy, which is, you know.
And like I said, I think the main thing for me is to make sure that I don't get it, it doesn't become too disparate, because I'm always working on 6 or 7 different things.
Yeah.
But that sometimes my energy is a little, I guess I don't get bored easily. In fact, I never get bored. I'm never bored.
Never not busy.
But I have so many different things I want to do.
Yeah.
So I will sometimes move on to the next one before I've completed that last thing. I will say I've got 7 things that I have to achieve this year.
Yeah.
And that's impossible.
Yeah.
If I pick 3, then I can do them.
Yeah.
But if I'm working on 7, they all become constantly... I've been working on a couple of things, you know, for 2 or 3... And in fact, the concert I did in February, I first... said to, like, Julie Atherton came and sang her concert.
Nice.
I think I've been saying to her for 10 years, when I do a concert, will you come and sing in it for me? And she said yes, and so many brilliant people have said yes, they will come and do, and they finally we did it because Kieran persuaded me to do it. But I probably never would have done. I probably would have always been thinking, I got to do that concert, and I will make a list of the things I want to do. So in a way, it's about prioritizing what one wants to achieve. And so the danger is starting new musicals.
Yeah.
Is starting new musicals on spec.
That's going to be the quote. The danger is starting new musicals.
It's a very dangerous thing. It is. But at the same time, two, three years ago, I was commissioned to write a show, which we did for Children in Need and with the University of Central Lancashire, which turned out to be a really lovely little show, which... is now kind of languishing in my bottom drawer, so to speak. And so one of the things I wake up every day and thinking, what am I going to do with that show? And this, so hopefully the college that I involved with is going to put on that show.
Okay, good.
And so hopefully that's a vehicle to do it. And because it's frustrating to have anything not on in some way so maybe we'll do an album. So this is my trouble. I say, oh, we're going to do an album. John, we're going to do a concert. And I want to do here's what I want to do. I want to do a star-studded gala concert of tomorrow morning on a Sunday night at the Palladium or somewhere in the West End with the most fabulous performers we can get. But I just want that show, which has been done in London, but it's been done small and it's been done all over the world, but I feel like it's never really had its moment in the sun in London. It's been so close to being produced in London about 3 times, where I literally have been told it's going to open at X Theatre on X night and it's just never happened. It's always fallen by the wayside. So I kind of think one day we're going to do a big event, a concert of that show, and then it will have had its moment in the sun, and it will be a West End musical for 3 hours. And but it will just... I just kind of think it's about exposing the work, exposing myself to more people, I think.
Wow.
Exposing the work to more
that
people.
That is... either way... you know, you'll get tongues wagging. So you've got Growl coming up.
Yeah, Growl. I mean, it's on tour with National Youth Music Theatre, but it's going to various festivals. So it's kind of a strange setup because it kind of goes to the venue for one performance and then they wait a couple of weeks and they come back and do it again somewhere else. So we're going to the Rose Theatre in Kingston on July 13th. Actually, I'm working backwards now.
Okay.
July 13th is the Rose Theatre in Kingston. Yeah. Obviously, that's the one closest to London. And then we are in Leicester on June the 8th.
Right.
The Leicester Curve Theatre, which is a fantastic place to be. And on May the 19th is our first outing. We opened May the 19th in Bury St. Edmunds at the festival. So it's at various different kind of theatre festivals. Yeah. Around the country, and I think that's it. I think those are the three venues. There was some talk about some more, but I think that's some.
Well, what we'll do is we'll let people know. But check it out. I mean, it's a great idea. It's a great idea. A nice big bad wolf. You know,
it is a life affirming musical.
Yeah,
it's just the kids are amazing, and we put the show together a few weeks ago. They kind of have a residential period where they work on the show, and they worked all, you know, 9 a.m. till 9 p.m.
yeah.
for 2 weeks, just putting the piece together, and did more than we could have imagined. So I think it's going to be excellent. I'm incredibly proud of it. So I hope people come and see it. It's and I think it's got some of my best tunes in it.
Nice. Yeah,
and I'm all about the tunes.
Nice. Listen, Lawrence, thank you so much for inviting me into your sitting room on a lovely, afternoon. The beautiful, that's open. You can hear dogs barking, birds singing. Thank you.
Of course, he's brilliant. And you love composer Lawrence Mark Y. there, chatting with me at his home in London, surrounded by a living menagerie. Now, I don't think I've ever had so many kisses while doing one of these podcast records. And by the way, I will put links in the show notes for all the things that we mentioned in the podcast today. But before I go, just a few housekeeping notes. If you're a theater professional, head on over to curtaincallonline.com and sign up for a free profile page. All you have to do is create an account with an email address, make up a cool password, away you go. You can also find jobs on our website and exclusive content. You can follow us on all the socials, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, @curtaincall, @CURTAINCALL, all one word, all lowercase. You can follow me @JohnSchwab, JohnSchwab. We'd love to hear from you if you have any suggestions or feedback for the podcast. Just get in touch with me via any of the social media platforms I just mentioned, or write to me at john@curtaincallonline.com. It just leaves me to say a huge thank you to Lawrence Mark Wythe. You can find out all you need to know about Growl tomorrow morning, about creatives, about any other show that Mark has written, if you go to his website, which is lawrencemarkwythe.com. And again, I will put it in the show notes. Or you can look at the National Youth Musical Theater page to find out about Growl and when it's playing. You've been listening to Lawrence's music during this podcast, so just go listen to more of it at his site and get in touch. Let him know what you think. Thank you for listening to the Curtain Call Theater Podcast, and I will catch you all next week. Bye. No more riding on the air.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com, and of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at SuppsMusical.com.